Welcome to PG Pulse, Press Ganey's podcast on all things healthcare, tech, and human experience. In this podcast, we'll be joined by some of the best and brightest minds in the industry to discuss challenges, share insights, and innovate the future of healthcare. Thanks for tuning in. We hope you enjoy the conversation. I'm Tom Lee, Press Ganey's Chief Medical Officer. We're here on the floor of HX24. And joining me today are two of my favorite people, one of whom studies grit, and the other, a true grit paragon. Angela Duckworth is the co-founder of the Character Lab, a nonprofit whose mission is to advance scientific insights that help children thrive. She has a variety of roles and accomplishments, and we're not going to use our time going through all of them. But I'll just say she is a rigorous and thoughtful psychology researcher and a professor at the University of Pennsylvania, who burst on the scene for many of us in 2013 when she won a MacArthur Fellow Award for her research on grit. And her TED Talk on grit is one of the most frequently viewed of all time. And her book, Grit, is a big bestseller. Now, Kavitha Bhavan, MD, is someone who I met in about 2015 when I was visiting Parkland, and the CEO, Fred Cerise, said, "There's someone you've really got to meet." And he introduced me to Kavitha, who had created this amazing program for giving outpatient parenteral therapy for patients who needed long-term intravenous antibiotics, even if they were homeless. The idea of giving home antibiotic therapy to people who are homeless seemed really jarring, but Kavitha had the creativity and the empathy to actually show trust for patients who often don't get trusted, don't get respect, and the program worked out beautifully. She's led a variety of other initiatives, all of which have that theme of making care better for patients in resource-deprived settings. She can actually imagine making things better when there don't seem to be any resources around at all. One of her most recent accomplishments that got her named Press Ganey's Physician of the Year this year was Annie's Place. So maybe you can tell the audience and Angela a little bit about Annie's Place.
Sure. Thank you so much for allowing me to participate. And Annie's Place is definitely a labor of love. It's a special project for us in a conjunction with a community-based organization in Dallas where we're able to provide on-site childcare for our patients that oftentimes have multiple social needs, including a safe place to leave their children when they're seeking their own medical care. And with the sponsorship of our CEO, we've been able to create this safe space for children to be looked after while their parents, caregivers, mothers are able to get sometimes even very life-saving therapies, chemotherapy, radiation, surgeries, and so forth, things that were otherwise postponed because they didn't have a safe place to leave their children. So it's really kind of listening to the needs of our patients and understanding that these social needs are oftentimes competing with their health needs, and how can we work with them to make a solution that works for all.
So Angela, I visited this place. You would love it. There are many places with much more resources. No one has anything like this. But now at Parkland, when people are getting their mammogram scheduled, radiology says, "Do you need childcare?" And these are people who don't have the resources to get childcare often. And you know how hard it is to get childcare, even if you have resources. So what's your reaction to this? And, and how do we clone people like Kavitha that to do things like this in circumstances where there don't seem to be resources?
So we should get to cloning Kavitha. But, one of the things to me as a psychologist who has been, known for, studying people who achieve their goals despite the odds. What I love about the idea of Annie's Place, it says, okay, maybe you are a gritty mom. Maybe you are a gritty dad. Maybe you have all the grit in the world. But if you don't have childcare, you can't actually do what you need to do to take care of your kids or yourself. And one of the misunderstandings, I think, about a quality like grit, passion or perseverance or long-term goals, the mental image is somebody who overcomes the odds just by force of will. In other words, they succeed despite their environment. And there is, of course, some truth to this, but I think the deeper truth is that everybody needs to be in an environment where they can succeed. And so one of the things I love about Annie's Place, it says like, wow, you know, what do gritty people do? They set up environments where other people can be successful. Sometimes it's, you know, thought of as like coddling or like, oh, well, if they really care, they find the motivation. It's like, no, they need some basic resources in order to then work as hard as they can. And so I just, you know, I do need to visit, but I just love this idea because to me, it's actually what I'm thinking about right now. Like to me, this is what I've been thinking about since writing the book.
Well, that is interesting. Not only do we need to cultivate gritty people, but we actually have to think about the context we create around them. Well, all right, so let's talk about the context that led to this. Your CEO, Fred Cerise, who is a fantastic guy, he was 36 years old when he sort of stumbled into the role of being Secretary of Health in Louisiana. And 6 months later, Katrina hit, and he had to learn to deal with that at the age of 36. He's a remarkable guy, but he wasn't looking to set up a child care center on Parkland. But Kavitha knocked on his door. You probably didn't knock. You probably just walked in. But like, what happened? Because I'm sure, you know, he's constrained for resources. How did it happen?
Absolutely. I think one of the things that our group, it's not just me, our group, the Innovation Center is most grateful for at Parkland is having leadership as someone like Dr. Fred Cerise as our CEO. And I think, you know, a big part of that is having the vision to see what's not right in front of you, understanding the possibilities of what can be, and moving away. I think all of us as a working group, and he is our leader and as our mentor, moving away from this learned sense of helplessness to kind of what can we do to make this better and different. And sometimes it involves taking some risk. And so he's created that space for us, a very safe place for us to try these things, to reimagine what care delivery can look like, and to think about sort of how we can make these sustainable changes and really be true to our mission.
So your reaction to that?
Okay, so you asked me originally, like, how do we clone Kavitha? And I think that mentors, and I don't know Fred either, right? Because I haven't been yet to visit. But I do think, in a way, what mentors do for anyone, even those who already have grit, is they do see what's possible. I mean, you mentioned learned helplessness. And as you know, Annie's Place and maybe Fred's mentorship is being contra that, right? Like, what about personal agency? What can we do here? There's a lot we can't do, but what can we do?
Right.
So my PhD mentor was Marty Seligman, who, of course, coined the term learned helplessness, which I will explain just briefly, because I do think this is all about the opposite of it. Yeah. So Marty, as a young psychologist, found that animals first and then people as well, when they are in situations where they're rigged such that there isn't anything you can do, they often then demonstrate a kind of helplessness response, even when circumstances change and they can do something. So this was first demonstrated with dogs and then, you know, with people, and actually became the first, a rigorous scientific model of depression. Now, what Marty observed from the very beginning is that some of the animals, so dogs in the case of the first experiments, some of the dogs, when they were exposed to these circumstances where they couldn't do anything and then were given an option to do something, many of the dogs, 2 out of 3, demonstrated learned helplessness. They didn't, you know, they didn't eat, they didn't drink, they didn't get up, like, you know, to try to, you know, improve their positions. But 1 out of 3, Marty would say, they were the optimist dogs, right? And 1 out of 3 still tried, even when history had taught them otherwise. And I think this idea of personal agency, of sort of hunting and searching, you know, maybe the last 6 months were a disaster, maybe the last year was a disaster, maybe I made 249 mistakes, but always hunting for what can I do? You know, what can I do to improve things? I think that really is the heart of what optimism is. I think that's at the core of resilience and grit. And I do think there are some rare individuals who can see a little farther than the rest. I don't count myself among them, but maybe mentors like Fred, they see it in people and they see it in circumstances. They see what's possible on the horizon.
Well, the idea of an optimist dog, it makes me realize that it reminds me that my wife, Sahela, often says that I'm basically like a black lab, which I think is, I may not be farsighted, but I am always ready to wag my tail.
I'm waiting to see whether there's a compliment in there.
Yes, there are. You developed the grit scale. You know, is there something for mentors that to evaluate how good a mentor you're going to be to someone like a Kavitha?
Yeah, so I haven't yet, but I will tell you, and Kavitha, I'm like, this is really what I'm working on right now. I'm about to write a chapter on mentorship. I think I'll know more about mentorship after I write this chapter. But here's what inspires me about mentors in general. So there's this very famous finding in psychology called the Pygmalion effect. And, you know, the origins of this is, you know, the Greek myth. But I'll tell you about the modern scientific study that the Pygmalion effect describes. And that is there are teachers, and there are teachers of very young children, maybe like first grade or so. And the teachers actually told a lie, actually. So in this classic study, teachers are told that certain of their children are late bloomers and they're going to be great. They're going to be geniuses, wow. But you can't tell now. Uh-huh. So these teachers are thinking, wow, and then then the teachers go and teach classes as usual. And what happens is it's a self-fulfilling prophecy. So those children, on average, are more likely to bloom intellectually. And the idea of the Pygmalion effect is that if a person, a mentor, can see something and predict that something wonderful is going to happen, then they start to look for it. They start to treat you like you're going to actually do great things. And the alchemy of that is that then the young person is finding that this teacher has some special interest in them. And wow, they have a lot of confidence in me. Well, they've been around for a while. Maybe I am actually not such a, you know, hopeless case after all. So the Pygmalion effect refers to what some would call these like self-fulfilling prophecies, where it's not just you and your own confidence. It's another person's confidence in you that kickstarts a cycle of small wins. And I really think that's a lot of mentorship, I think there's more to mentorship than that. I think the combi, you know, like you're like, wow, do you really, and on your bad days, you know, like to have a mentor.
I love the way you explain that. And I have to shamelessly say that I see Dr. Lee, Tom Lee here as a mentor. And I said that this morning when I got the award, and I really do mean that, but it's exactly the way you described it. When people see things that sometimes you don't see yourself yet, and they encourage you to keep going.
No, he does have the family reputation. He mentors everyone.
Oh, okay. Well,
particularly those who are younger than us, but yeah, and does a very good job.
I thanked him this morning, and I truly do mean that, because I think that that's what happens when you see people that have faith in you or belief in your ideas. When you're just starting out and you are, you're resource constrained, or you're not in that position where you can make a lot of change happen, that's what gives you that energy to move.
Well, you know, I think that the conversation makes me feel like this is another currency of social capital that we have to develop, and that Kavitha's can't be like, you know, you may have been like a flower coming up through a crack in the cement who happened to have an environment that Fred Sweets happened to come, you know, at just the right moment for you, but we can't make it like flowers coming up through cracks in the cement. We have to cultivate them systematically, and this maybe is something new to try to measure and try to support. Anyway, I am so thankful for you spending your time with us. I know that the wheels will be spinning among the people.
The wheels are already spinning. Yes. They're spinning, and we're going to follow up.
I'm so grateful to be able to meet you, and it's just wonderful to learn more about the mentorship and sort of.
Maybe the best thing I'll do today will be introducing you two. So thank you for joining us for the podcast today.
Thank you. Thank you, Kavitha. Thank you, Tom.
That's a wrap. Thank you for joining us today. And special thanks to our guests for sharing their time and insights. Stay tuned for our next episode, which will be released soon. In the meantime, visit info.pressganey.com/resources to browse our content library, where you'll find more information on the human experience and a lot more.